Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, what happens when a good Southern young woman artist who lives down in Pinehurst gets caught up in an emotional crisis that unleashes an uncontrollable sexual desires? Well, our great, respected author Peggy Payne's new book, Cobalt Blue, weaves an enticing story around this question. So she's come to explain to us how and why and why she wrote this book. Welcome, Peggy Payne.
Thank you, D.G. I appreciate being here. And why did I write such a book? It started in a different place than it has wound up. It started quite a few years ago. I've worked on it on and off with finished other books while I was writing this one. But it started off because I thought to myself, well, this first novel I just finished was kind of intense and had a lot of serious stuff in it. Why don't I write...
What novel are you
talking about? Revelation.
This is the book set in Chapel Hill.
Yes,
in a church
is.
In Chapel Hill.
That's
a lot of
right.
people. We study in Sunday school.
This
is a man, just for those, lots of people
right.
know this story because it's gotten quite a bit of attention. A preacher in a church, downtown Chapel Hill, begins to hear the voice of God.
Right, yeah.
And then he makes the mistake of telling people God's talking to him, and it goes
and
from there.
And people don't think he's well. So that was pretty intense for me, and I said to myself, why don't I write a light bedroom comedy? What fun that would be. And the premise was going to be this woman who's facing turning 40 and is tired of living on an artist's income. Decides that she will turn a few discreet tricks in her small hometown.
Oh, okay. So this is sort of a
That's where it began.
No, I love this, but I love this story, and we'll talk about what the real story turned out to be.
Yeah.
But I love this as a respected, you know, but playful young woman.
Yeah.
Worried about going old, and also. Not making enough money through her
right,
art.
Right, yeah.
She decides to discreetly go into business.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
And so, all right, so that sounds like a neat story. And this is going to be set in Pinehurst, too.
That's right. I just thought, what an awkward situation she was setting up for herself.
Mm-hmm.
and I thought it would be hilarious. But
what happened? That sounds like a great story.
Maybe I'll write that one yet. But instead, she has this overwhelming experience while she's painting. She's an artist, and she has this... physical, emotional, spiritual kind of peak experience while she's in the meditative state of painting and does not know what has hit her. And that's what starts just out of control sexual urges. It become compulsive. And she just has no idea why this was happening. She was in a bad place in her life. The money was a problem and she felt burned out with her work. She wasn't doing the work she felt she was supposed to be doing. And she was scared of doing her own work. She's mostly doing commissions of whatever anybody asked her to paint. And so she was feeling bad, but then this thing hit her. It started in the middle of the night and really worked its way to...
This thing.
Well, this thing is this emotional, physical, overwhelming... sensations that felt like a combination of sexual arousal, the flu, and union with the divine. So she didn't know what this was. The story is her effort to find out what this is and keep the good part of it and get a little grip on herself because she can't keep on the way she's doing with essentially sexual addiction. That this is uncharacteristic. It is completely a shock to her. And so she's obviously got to get some control. She can't trust herself at all.
It sounds, as you describe it, and your husband's a psychiatrist.
Psychologist,
yeah. So you... I'm sure, had this conversation with him, but it sounds like sort of a bipolar manic episode where she's a combination of very high and excited and then crashing. But it's not that. Is that right?
No, it's not that. She's not really crazy, even though I've been taking part in what we're calling the Crazy Ladies Book Tour. With another novelist and I, Carrie Knowles, have been going around to stores and doing signings. And both our main characters seem crazy for 90% of the book, and that's why we've called it that. She's not crazy. She's had a very intense spiritual experience of a sort that many, many people believe in and report to have happened to them. The side effects are not always these or quite this dramatic, but what it's called is Kundalini rising, which is a tantric term.
And a tantric, what is that?
Yeah, that's... it's sort of a wing of Hinduism or Buddhism that the belief is the integration of physical and spiritual. It's not the way Christianity sort of divides the physical world and the spiritual world into two, which is called dualism. And In this way of thinking, they are woven. That's what tantra really means, is woven, weaving. They are woven together, which infuses the divine into everything and makes it hard to call something bad. So, you know, there's not this delineation of some physical things are bad, repulsive, sinful, and the spiritual world is non-bodily. You're squinting your eyes.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I got lots of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. So this woman, who's your heroine or your main character,
Andy,
has had taken over by this very powerful. Transformation.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
Now you're talking about this, not as she's not crazy.
Right.
I would look at her and say, this poor girl has gone crazy. Let's get a doctor to give her a shot and calm her down.
Yeah.
You're saying no, wait. She's had this high emotional experience, and this is part of Asian religion.
Yeah.
Kundalini. And people strive to have this.
But
it's not good for her. maybe it is good for her.
Yeah.
But she's aroused sexually and becomes almost a sexual predator, jumping towards every man she comes in contact with.
Yeah. And that the reason that it is an extreme case, to be sure, but there are plenty of people who report extreme sexual arousal with this experience. And it kind of makes sense because here's what Kundalini is. The idea is that it's a reservoir of energy at the base of the spine. And the goal, if you want it to rise, is to do meditative or yogic practices that both prepare you for the experience and trigger it. When it happens spontaneously, you're not prepared, and that's what happens to Andy. She wasn't looking for this. She doesn't know what it is. And located at the base of the spine, it tends to, for many people have some over-arousal effect for at least a while. So there are lots of people in Chapel Hill who report this experience, by the way.
I've never heard about this before. I have to confess that when I go around talking about your book and how wild it is, and I say Kundalini. We go all over the place with conversations, including what you've talked about, which is the sort of the branch of yoga, where you do these exercises and meditation to try to unleash this package of power or energy or something that's down at the located at the base of your spine. And when it happens, it's wonderful.
Ultimately. It's wonderful. And I've actually heard people say, Kundalini is wonderful.
Yeah.
That's true. There's also called Kundalini wrong rising or Kundalini syndrome when it kind of goes awry at first. But then it becomes wonderful because the whole idea is this tower of energy coming up through your chakras. This is all part of the same tradition. Coming up the body, there are little vortex energy centers, seven of them. So basically, the energy comes straight up this column of the spine and out the top of the head.
In an explosion, or does it come gradually? Or?
It can do either one. And the metaphor is a snake rising, actually, which can, I think that's a little unnerving, that metaphor. I prefer to think of things in river-like terms.
We got to take a break. I don't need to take a break right now because I'm really into all of this. I'm visiting with Peggy Payne, who is the author of a brand new novel, Cobalt Blue, and we're talking about some of the combined religious and sexual and spiritual aspects of writing that Peggy Payne is famous for. She and I'll be right back.
This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station, and streaming live at chapelborough.com. There's an app for that.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Peggy Payne. She's the author of Cobalt Blue. It's a new novel. If you joined us late, it's set down in Pinehurst with a young woman who is who experiences a transformative experience that leads her into a troubled story where she tries to find out what to do about this. But there are aspects of this, what Peggy, you call Kundalini rising.
Yes.
That we've been talking about.
That's right.
And this makes your book, which is full of sex, respectable because it introduces a puzzle that has religious and spiritual.
You're right on. And I tend to write about religion and sex together. I mean, I've started kind of describing myself as writing spooky, sexy novels about religion, which some folks think those contradict each other. I do not think they contradict each other.
Well, you've also rebranded yourself as writing about the supernatural.
Yeah.
And that covers religion, I guess, and ghost stories and mystery stories. So you're free to write.
I'm free.
You unleash this Kundalini rising has unleashed in you this imagine. You're free to imagine things now.
Yeah. But I look at this as realistic. I don't feel that I've written any fantasy. I really don't.
So you believe in the supernatural, not just in the religious sense, but all over the place.
I don't believe in all of it.
You just like to write.
I don't believe in all of it, but I'm open to the ideas of I'm open to most any possibility of the supernatural because I don't know for sure what's on the other side or, what's after death or what things are unseen. And I love the idea that there's a lot. So I'm ever exploring that in my fiction. That's really what my fiction is doing, is trying to, be a medium, find out. I think of it as sort of spiritual reconnaissance for myself.
Wow. Well, you're traveling around promoting your book and talking about it, and my experience with authors is that they learn a lot when they are visiting with people who have read their books, and it's, they're an explosion of questions and experiences. And what I found in talking about your book is this, about what we were talking about before the break, this Kundalini rising idea, and I've gotten all kinds of feedback about that. So I want to talk about it just a little
bit. Okay, good, good. Sure. Well, I'm curious what feedback you've gotten.
Well, the part of it is confusing because it is, as we talked about earlier, this Kundalini, this is it's a Asian religious idea and spiritual idea that there is a package of power at the base of your spine that can be by meditation or yoga or can be unleashed in you. And so this is a great religious experience or that people are striving to release it.
Yeah.
Now, in your book, it turns out to be a sort of a detrimental thing that needs to be cured rather than enhanced.
For a while, but the light does gloriously rise. She does get to the wonderful part, which is there was no way I was going to write it without that. So she does get so she can channel her energy and know what she's dealing with a little bit better, and feel fully alive, fully herself, and capable.
Talk about your experience with this Kundalini and your research about what you learned and people that you talked about because. Have you experienced? Have you done this? Or have you tried it?
I haven't. At least I don't think I have, and I think it's in the category of things that if you have, you know it. But I did a curious thing. I kept a journal on the three months I spent in Varanasi, India, doing research for my novel Sister India. And going back over that for another reason, rereading it years later, I found a passage in there that talked about shooting upward energy
You had experienced something like this.
And how much I liked that, but I didn't call it anything.
You didn't remember it, and you didn't remember it.
I didn't remember it. I didn't call it anything. It didn't have any side effects, good or bad, outside of the moment. I was very jet-lagged at that time, very short of sleep and dehydrated, but I felt that. So I don't know. The other possibility is that when I was searching for terms to describe a peak experience when I was writing, that my semi-conscious mind seized on the closest thing to it in my life. That either one of those explanations makes sense to me. But the one spooky thing that has happened in this whole trip of writing about this was I wrote the whole book without ever saying that word or knowing it. It was just this overwhelming experience happened to this woman, Andy, and sent her on a sexual spiral. I had written several drafts of it. I had worked on it. And then I was sitting on my porch one night watching the rain, listening to it, and just doing nothing but sitting there. And I thought, it's Kundalini. Now, I had heard...
You thought you'd heard the word, but you didn't know what it...
I had heard the word once, and I had overheard it at a party. One woman had been kind of flinging her hands in a helpless way, and the other one said, maybe it's your Kundalini. And the first one said, I don't think I'm there. And I was absolutely certain that's what had happened to Andy.
This is interesting. So you pasted this Kundalini into the book. Because it fit. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying this.
I got it. Well, the term I use is it welled up. That's the way it felt to me. Uh-huh. That it was all the pieces were there. It matched perfectly. And then it felt like a welling up.
But you're a student of Asian religion, so this once you got into it, did it fit within your understanding of the way they do things over there in a religious way?
Well, this is not every Hindu or Buddhist believes this, but yes, and I'm really not a scholar. I am more impressionistic about my research, but what I've found, it really did fit. And when I did my research and found out what it was, I was fascinated. And obviously, the fact that I had written a novel that described this experience caught my attention.
So you can send some of the royalties to this woman who taught you, who first mentioned the word.
Yes, right.
Well, we need to take a break. I hate to take a break because I want to come back and talk a little bit more about Kundalini and the relationship with the Christian religion. After we take the break. But I'm talking to Peggy Payne, and I persuaded her to come to talk about her new novel, Cobalt Blue. And we will talk. We are talking about the book, but one aspect of it. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Peggy Payne. She's the author of Cobalt Blue. It is a book. If you join us late, it's full of religion, ideas of North Carolina politics, sex, and a young woman in trouble who's solving a mystery, who's something's happened to her, and she works to solve her mystery. And part of it has to do with this term that Peggy Payne's taught me called Kundalini rising. I hear it now all the time. We talked about what happened to the young woman in the book who experienced this kind of Kundalini bad or something.
Mm-hmm,
you know? But in poking around to try to understand this term, to be prepared to talk to you about it, I was interested in the whole excitement in the Christian religion, particularly among evangelical preachers who are worried about about Christians who have come to believe, who have come to embrace the Kundalini experience, and in part because of what you talked about earlier, which is the Eastern religion's idea that God is woven into everything.
That
the Kundalini experience challenges that because God is everywhere in this experience, and that you're finding, and they talk like they're scared to death.
Really, I hadn't heard that.
Kundalini is gonna idea is just incompatible with Christianity. Now, are you finding? How are you finding this on the as you talk about this on the road?
I don't think it is. It kind of is incompatible in a way because of the way Christianity divides the physical and the spiritual into two different things. However, there in so many religions, there is some version of this psychic energy, and chi is probably more familiar term to a lot of people.
Not to me, but
anybody in the martial arts would know about chi. If you want to be an immovable rock, you just sink your chi into the ground, and it's really hard to knock you over that way. That is a similar reservoir of this energy. Now, this can really start an argument, but some people say the Holy Spirit is something on that order in the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Ask me to explain the Trinity.
No. Well,
and I don't necessarily buy that, but...
No, but I'm trying to, because there are devout Christians who embrace the experience of Eastern religion of the at oneness with God.
Yeah.
And so the Holy Spirit, and I'm not a theologian or anything either, but that the analogy of the Holy Spirit coming to take charge of a person, that many Christians have the experience this. And so it's analogous, I guess, to what the Eastern religion idea of at oneness with God.
It seems so, and it does make me think of Pentecostal religion, ecstatic religion. It seems to me that those things, the expressions, ecstatic expressions of religion in lots of traditions, have as much in common as people of the same religion do in dogma.
Yeah. Well, like when we watch television and we see the preacher put his hand on the head of a person who's physically or mentally challenged and is healed, and the healing scene, you know, that there's a shockwave of power that goes through. Now, sometimes we're pretty suspicious that this is that we're being fooled, but that would be something like the Kundalini.
You know, I don't think anybody's making that claim, but I don't not using that word. And what I have learned of Kundalini, it hadn't said much about the heel kind of. Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's been an internal.
We're going
global with it.
I'll tell you what. Let's talk about the story. Let's talk about the woman. For those of you who've been listening and been patiently listening to my curiosity about Kundalini, we're going to talk about the young woman that you write about. And tell us about this, for me, interesting and appealing character who runs into trouble. Tell us more about her.
Well, I'm glad you find her appealing. She behaves so badly that, you know, that a writer could worry about that.
Well, maybe but, part of the behaving badly is part of
liking her. Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, a number of people have said they could identify. She's 38. She's single. She's a painter. Sure, her 11-year kind of ho hum relationship is just broken up. She had a boyfriend, but it wasn't that big a deal. Yeah,
it hung on, but it was not something
not
that
great.
You'd write
yeah.
A novel about that
right,
loving
yeah.
relationship.
But still, when you know losing somebody after 11 years and it wasn't really her choice, that can deal you a blow. And she also has going that she had a too good childhood in a way. Her parents traveled all over the world, and she was an only child, and they took her with them. So she has seen the whole world and felt like, you know, the little princess. And now she's back in her hometown, probably waiting for that to start up again. The family romance and the princess status. But her parents have moved to London, and she's kind of living in her daydreams. Which doesn't get you anywhere. So that's the situation where when all this uproar strikes her is that everything has kind of gone kaput, and living in her daydreams is obviously not going to work anymore. But it was really such a good life, and so it's, you know, it's hard to come down from.
Well, one of the side stories, which I found most interesting, isn't that because I like politics.
Yeah,
is that she is a part of the complications that you designed for in her life? Is that out of the blue, she's offered a commission to earn, and she needs money.
Yeah,
earn $100,000 painting the senior United States senator who happens to be a patriarchal,
extreme racist,
very conservative. You know, iconic, known all over the. I mean, his name was not Jesse Helms, but it could have been Jesse Helms.
His name's Billy Sylvester.
Billy Sylvester. And so she's a big, like many artists, she's a big liberal.
Yeah.
And so this appalls her that she worries that her liberal, her artist friends will be put off.
Yeah.
By her taking on this assignment. So she's – how does this fit
and,
into
well,
the story?
And worse, that she is making the worst possible use by her lights of her ability. This is worse than just doing designs for things she doesn't care about. This is promoting something that she thinks is truly bad. But that amount of money gives her – 3 years to work on her own work. However, that which is appealing, but it's also scary. Since she's already scared of getting into her own work, as artists of every sort are likely to know about.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? Explain just a little bit more.
Okay, this book that you can imagine one might hesitate at writing it, given where it goes. The sex is pretty dark, and things remain dark for quite a while, and it's easy to think, well, what's my mother going to think of this book?
Oh, you're thinking.
You see what I mean? You can be scared of your own work for a lot of reasons, where it will take you and what you will wind up saying.
So you're saying, this is so interesting, Peggy Payne, you're saying that sometimes, like a painter gets the work guides the painter rather than the painter guiding the work. And you're saying the same kind of thing with respect to a writer, that sometimes you lose control in the work.
More often than not, if it's going well, I think. Well, so much of it comes from the unconscious, preconscious material that you kind of have a hold on, and then it slips away from you again, and then it comes back, and you're not sure you want it to come back. It's a funny fear, because on one hand, all you're doing is typing or dabbing paint. On the other hand, it's an eruption of stuff that you don't know what to expect is going to be in that eruption. So it can be unnerving, and that's what she fears. And certainly, I know what that feels like, and I think everybody who ever sat down to tell a story can feel that way.
Afraid that your book or your painting will take you places that will make you uncomfortable, or make your close-in friend and family not think well of you. But you do go ahead anyway.
I feel like if there's something that you won't write about, you're not going to write about much. That I think whether you write about the weirdest things your unconscious kicks up or not, the willingness to do so is crucial, because if I put a roadblock on anything, then it seems to block way too much. It tends to make the writing just stuff. And not vital.
This is a challenge for a writer, or for me thinking about the challenges that you face. Part of what you have to do is you have to get a book written.
Yeah.
And in order to get the book written, you have to follow. You have to have a plan, and you have to make it work, and you have to get to the end of it, and that if you're just following the your muse all over the place, that if you don't put boundaries on your muse, then you're just going to be telling where you're going to go.
I do disagree with that. About half of writers have a plan. I don't know the percentage, but there are two ways of going about it. The plan, figuring out what's going to happen, and that is efficient. It is not my way. I'm not able to do it. I don't seem to think of the stuff in advance. It just evolves. That means I write many, many drafts and figure out as I go along what this is about and why it's important and why I care about it. With Cobalt Blue, more so than anything I've ever written, it just took going over it and over it and over it, and I learned more every time about what her dilemma was, and I became more fearless every time. It's been writing Cobalt Blue has been probably the it's changed me more than anything else I've written.
Oh, well.
And it may be partly because it took me 25 years to do it. And I wrote three other books in the, depending on how you count, three or four, while I was doing this, but I kept coming back to it. So I forget what you asked me in the beginning.
Oh, I tell you, we'll take a break and we'll get our question. But whatever the question was, that was a great answer, Peggy Payne. Peggy Payne's the author of Cobalt Blue. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Peggy Payne about her novel, Cobalt Blue, which she just told us before the break, it took her 25 years to write.
With little breaks.
And you said it transformed you.
I think so.
What question do you think I'm going to ask? How are you different?
I'm unhesitating about what I write now. I think I can deal with on the screen what comes up. That may be I may go back to my office and discover that I shouldn't have made such a brash statement. But I do feel my imagination feels free.
Yeah, no, I love this, and it goes back. You know, I spent a lot of time quizzing you about Kundalini, the concept. And not to say that this is related to it, but that there is something that binds us, you know, that keeps us together. And it can be both positive and negative. But the positive aspects of breaking out of that are you're experiencing now as a writer, that you feel freer and the work seems to be. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I feel not that it happens faster, but that I'm willing to do it. And there was one key moment, actually. Curiously, this happened while crossing the Atlantic on the Queen Elizabeth II. I had been very troubled about the Sister India, which is a book that was my second novel that was published. I wrote and published that during the process of writing Cobalt Blue, and I was having problems. I was very discouraged with it, and my husband and I took this vacation, and I was also writing an article about, I was working vacation, but anyway, I was writing an article about writers at sea on this ship, and Francis Ford Coppola was writing a script in the casino during the day, and Ray Bradbury was working, and I went out on deck one day, and it was very misty, foggy, and I somehow came to the notion that took effect that I will write whatever weird stuff comes up, even if it's weird as deep sea creatures. That I'm ready.
And it's a transformative moment in the sense that you free yourself from the
From
whatever it was that you're growing up and all this stuff. It's not that you're disrespectful of all of this,
right,
but you say, I'm not going to be bound by it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think we contain so much stuff, all of us, that is a little outside the lines. And Cobalt Blue is really about that outside the lines part of this woman. And it was... It was unnerving and satisfying to write and deal with the actual writing of it.
Well, you sound so good. Is there any downside to where you've taken yourself and transformed yourself? Are there problems, as there were for your hero and heroine in Cobalt Blue with this transformative experience that she
had?
Well,
yeah, there's some cost to it, because the other piece of that moment on the ship in the fog was... I'm going to do this whatever it costs me. Mm-hmm. And I think commercially it has cost me, because to put serious religion, spirituality in the same book with somewhat 50 Shades of Grey sex that goes on quite a while, this publishers think of that as two different bunches of readers.
Where are they going to put it on the shelf?
So, you know, so I have given myself shelving problems. But I don't think once you get past publishers and actual bookshelves that readers, that people put these things necessarily in two different worlds.
Well, there's a plus side, an exploitive commercial side, and that is that that people are interested in these two things.
They're interested in sex and
moved by it, and they're interested in religion and moved by it. And so I would have accused you of not having a transformative experience, but that you had a commercial revelation that this is the kind of stuff that would sell.
Well, no. It's actually harder if you put the two things together. It really is. And if somebody's going to buy something for the sex scenes, a lot of time they can just go online now and find whatever they're looking for.
Well, you better be glad that you're out of time, because the next question was going to be, did you just go to the web and get these sex scenes, or did you do some research, some personal research.
I was asked that on Playboy Radio,
really?
Too, and I said, this book is not autobiographical.
All right.
This is fiction.
We will, listen, whatever it is, autobiographical or fiction, it's great reading, and it's provocative in
lots of
respects. Thanks, Peggy Payne, for writing Cobalt Blue and then for coming back to Chapel Hill to share some of it. With the folks who live here.
It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin and Who's Talking, and I'll be back here real soon.